One of the main aims of Real Science when we set it up was to help teachers and pupils navigate the oceans of online information. There are wonderful science websites out there, but how many teachers have the time to find them, or to separate the good from the average, the interactive and engaging from online textbooks that no young person would read? Ian McCracken, the Learning Resources Manager at Govan High School, was convinced that we've got it wrong about kids and computers. It's true that pupils enjoy using computers, Ian says, but it's usually for exciting, interactive games. It's quite a jump to say this means they will enjoy learning online, or know how to do it. The e-literacy skills that young people need aren't being taught, and don't always use even when they are, include choosing and using good keywords for searching, refining a search, and knowing how to navigate a relevant website, if they can find one. Pupils need not just traditional literacy skills, but much more besides, he says. Real Science aims to help by finding good science websites and resources, and linking them to a meaningful context through the news stories and discussion topics. A big list of useful websites is pretty useless, I find. Look at browser bookmarks, for instance. Or is that just mine? One of the hardest problems facing young people looking for online information is assessing how reliable a site is. Can you trust the information it contains? Largely yes, if it's BBC or NASA, but that's a tiny fraction of what's out there. It's a bit like the problems young people face when they're chatting to online friends they haven't met. How do they know that 15-year-old Lucy, who likes LaRue, isn't 45-year-old Fred, who likes young girls? Similarly in science, Professor Kleinpoppen from Princeton University, writing about nuclear energy, could easily be Alec Armstrong from Auchinleck, airing his ill-informed opinions. I remember my dad settling discussions sometimes when I was young with, "It's true, I read it in the paper." It always annoyed me. It was a clincher he stopped using as soon as his son started writing for the newspapers, and he realised journalists were mostly ordinary guys who did their homework. There are plenty of ordinary guys online, and not all of them have done their homework. There are also sites that deliberately peddle misinformation, separating the good quality online sources from the prejudice, drivel and plain lies is one of the most valuable e-literacy skills. If we take a web search on climate change, for instance, that returns reputable sites that communicate the scientific consensus, certainly in the first handful of pages, which is all most people look at. But now try searching on global warming. As of today, 15th of April 2009, the third hit you get is a site called globalwarming.org, which looks and sounds like the real deal. It's professionally presented with an authoritative feel. But look more closely. Try these extracts from the front page. Quote, "Here we go again with the Wilkins ice shelf. Who's the biggest environmental hypocrite? Cap and trade hurts the little guy. Green agitators. Alarmists get their wish." The entire site, in fact, once you look at it, is a platform for climate change deniers, funded no doubt by some of the same businesses that were part of the supposedly now disbanded Global Climate Coalition, which set out to present climate change science as just a theory, and succeeded with large sections of the public. There's no way of telling from the website globalwarming.org itself who exactly they are. The rationale behind the site is nowhere explained, nor is its funding identified, nor the individuals who run it. All these are basic first steps in trying to assess the credibility of websites. But Ian McCracken's point is that nobody in schools is currently teaching these steps, except for a few enlightened librarians and resources managers. Real science is a first filter, but we're not infallible. As science teachers, we need to provide guidance and good sites to the pupils, and if we have time, teach them some of the basic skills so they can assess the websites themselves. Take a look, for instance, at the links to the Open University, Alberta University and Crosby High School for some good guidance on this. So what's all that got to do with this week's stories? Well, one of the biggest issues around is how we can generate all the energy we're going to need in the 21st century. Coal, oil and gas are damaging our climate and won't last forever. Do we stick wind turbines on every hill? Do we go nuclear in a big way? If we replace dirty old oil with clean green biofuels, can we still feed the world? These are tough questions, and ferreting out the facts among the myths, misconceptions and bald assertion is not easy. Real science will return to energy again in the months ahead. It's hard to find any scientific issue that's as important. So in searching for websites on energy generation, we found one that seems useful for all sorts of issues and implications. It's called procon.org. Unlike globalwarming.org, this site clearly states what it's for, who funds it, and why. Its aim is to promote, quote, critical thinking, education, and informed citizenship by presenting controversial issues in a straightforward, non-partisan, pro-con format. What that means is that they outline the background and the straightforward stuff about an issue, then they quote a bunch of experts on both sides of the arguments. Topics tackled in this way on the website include the death penalty, illegal immigration, and Iraq. In science, there's sports and drugs, genes and sexuality, and alternative energy. There's also one on nuclear power, but since it hasn't been updated since 1988, it's not too topical. This format provides a useful starting point for science class discussions, and there's a page of links to online lesson plans. There is, though, one flaw in this whole pro-con approach, evident to anybody who reads the newspapers, where science stories are often marred by something called journalistic balance. Most journalists and editors are arts and literature educated, and are out of their depth with science. They can't apply the fine-tuned critical faculties that serve them well with stories about politics, literature, and people. So in science stories that have important issues and implications, they will often quote someone who takes the opposing view, Alec Armstrong from Auchinleck maybe, or Bjorn Lomborg from Denmark. In the interest of journalistic balance, they're playing right into the hands of the climate change is only a theory crowd, the evolution can't explain the human eye mob, and the stem cells are the work of the devil characters. Procon.org tries to solve this problem by giving a credibility rating to every individual or organisation they quote. It's a great idea, but quite hard to do in practice, they admit. The website looks valuable to me for science teachers who want to get pupils exploring facts and discussing issues. Have a look. That's all for this week from Real Science. Thanks for listening.